fight, and if I could, I would like to give this testimony and have it entered in the record pertaining to both bills. Because there's a great deal of overlap.
For the purposes of the record, I ask that this testimony be incorporated in House Bill. What's the other number?
3197.
3197 for the record, and please proceed, and I won't call you back up for that bill then. Okay.
Thank you. My wife and I have been foster parents for approximately 8 years. During that period, we have had one child or a sibling.
Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Roger Feit.
Okay. It's my job to make sure it's in the record. Go ahead.
During that period, we've had one child or a sibling pair in our home for about 6 years of that period. Most of our involvement has been with children that were in permanent placement and went from our home to an adoptive home. We've cared for a total of 6 foster children during this period. I'm here today because the 7-year-old foster boy who is currently in our home and his 2 sisters, ages 11 and 12, have been badly treated by the system that is intended to protect them. I'm convinced that House Bill 3197 will inflict similar pain and suffering on hundreds of other innocent children. Our 7-year-old is one of 4 siblings. These children were placed in a foster care as a group. After living in that home for 1.5 years, it was deemed necessary to remove the 3
Roger,
older children
Roger,
from the home.
Roger, we do have your testimony. If you prefer, you can continue reading it, but we kind of like to hear it in your own words, and if you wish, however you prefer.
Okay, well, I left the notes back there for that option. These children are part of a family. They've been raised from birth together as a family. And when it was necessary to remove the older 3 children from the foster home, the foster parents that retained the then 4-year-old child for a period until CSD could determine what the best placement for that child would be. But it was their plan to move that child in with the 7-year-old, now 7-year-old, that we have when it was appropriate to do that. The foster parents, other foster parents then began a series of legal and political actions under the psychological parent law to frustrate CSD's attempt to keep these children together. And in fact, that court did finally give custody of the youngest sibling to the other foster parents. That case is now on appeal to the appeals court, but the passage of time makes the outcome of that appeal irrelevant to these particular children. We've now come to the point where it's necessary to inform the 3 older children that their youngest sister will not be adopted into the same home with them, and that they will not have an opportunity to be a part of her life in the future. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff to deal with for a 7-year-old. And there were very special and strong attachments between these children, perhaps because of the neglected and abusive situation that they grew up in. And so it's especially tragic that after losing parents, they're now also going to lose their youngest sister. There will be many children who remain in the foster care system for 2 years or more. And because that is mentioned in the psychological parent law as providing a prima facie case for having standing under this law, there will be many opportunities for this law to be used in dealing with foster children. I do not oppose the idea of a psychological parent having standing in these issues per se, but I was shocked to find out that the psychological parent law makes no reference to siblings, makes no statement about keeping sibling groups together, and provides no direction to the courts to make decisions about custody, placement, and guardianship of siblings with the best interest of the family group as a whole as the guiding principle. In this particular case in point, the judge deemed that a parent-child relationship must be more important than a sibling relationship, no matter how good that sibling relationship might be. And so whether or not you agree with that opinion, it's clear that the effect of this is to declare open season on foster parents to adopt children away from natural siblings, even when strong supportive emotional ties exist between those siblings. What I object to in this bill is that it gives more discretion to judges and provides no badly needed direction to consider the needs of sibling groups in dealing with these kinds of questions. But I think there are two other ways that this bill will cause great mischief and grief to other children.
Let me interrupt you and ask you a question. When you refer to the, maybe show my stupidity. When you refer, what do you call it, the psychological
parent law.
Parent law. Is that the section before us?
That's 109.119, which is being modified by this bill.
Okay, so that's okay. Just so I understand your shorthand terminology. Thanks.
Representative Dix. This bill you're referring to is 3197 or 3025?
Representative Dix, this is
3025.
Well, this testimony will enter both, but it's a good question.
I just was curious for the record.
For the record, when you say this bill right now, which is it you're speaking
to? I was referring then to 3197.
Okay.
Does it also not...
Representative Dix.
Mr. Chair, does it... 109.119 is what you cited?
That's the law that is being modified by both of these bills.
By both bills. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bellamy.
I'd like to ask you a couple of three questions that deal with your particular case.
Go ahead.
You evidently felt that the siblings should stay together.
Yes, I did.
And the original foster parents decided out of the four children they wanted to keep one.
That's correct.
And evidently, then, we had a little difference of opinion between the foster parents.
I disagree with that, but I'm basically on the sidelines. All of this was going on between CSD, the courts, and the other foster parents.
And it was CSD's position that the siblings should stay together?
Yes, it was also the recommendation of the Citizens Review Board that they should be kept together.
Representative Bellamy.
In your own words, what is the reason the judge decided to allow the one sibling to stay with the other parent?
Representative Bellamy, is that a fair question? Well, if you want to tackle it, go ahead. But I think whatever you prefer.
Well, I think the judge feels that parent-child relationships are of primary importance, and that sibling relationships, while nice to have, cannot measure up in any way to that. And I think there are many people in the area of psychology that would have great difficulty with applying it that broadly.
Thank you.
My concern about the existing law is, and these amendments which would encourage it further, is that people who are unable to adopt a child may decide that becoming a foster parent is the way to adopt a child. And I think if we encourage people to enter the foster care system with that intent, we will find that many of those people are in conflict with CSD, in conflict with the natural parents and other relatives of the foster children they have, and more importantly, often in conflict with what is in the best interest of those children. So I think we must not send out a message to people that they can become adoptive parents through the foster care system. The other way that this bill...
You speak to the erosion of CSD's planning. Number two. So when you say this bill, let's get it straight that although this generally applies to 3025, you're primarily speaking to 3197.
Yes, I'm sorry, that's correct. During the period of time that all of this was going on with our foster child, I came to a conclusion that the erosion of CSD's ability to carry out their planning function was at the heart of the problem. The people I dealt with at CSD were dedicated and good-intentioned people, but I found that they hung on every word that a judge said. They agonized over whether the judge would get angry at them if they took some action that they felt was indeed in the best interest of the children. And they agonized over whether the Salem office of CSD would support their position. My conclusion is that CSD feels too vulnerable politically, legally, and administratively to carry out what they believe to be in the best action, in the best interests of the children. And I believe that it's, on balance, would be helpful to insulate CSD from some of that kind of pressure. Let me summarize by just stating the two specific recommendations that I would have for modifications which could be made incorporated into either one of these bills. I believe that the psychological parent law needs to be modified to insulate children from the political, administrative, and financial power of adults. This can be accomplished by the following changes. 1. Modify the law to clearly state that the principle that the courts should follow when the psychological parent law is invoked is to do what is in the best collective interest of all the children when sibling groups are involved. And 2, to modify the law to clearly state that the burden of proof is on the psychological parent to show by a preponderance of evidence that the plan they propose is in the best collective interest of all the children when sibling groups are involved, unless they can show that CSD has acted with willful disregard for the best interests of the children. Thinking back to the testimony that we heard just prior to my testimony, from the harassment angle, if we require the burden of evidence on those who would dispute the plan of the child care professionals, we increase their burden of proof, then we reduce the potential for use of that law for simple harassment.
Questions of this witness?
I have one question.
Representative Baumann.
I'm just a little bit surprised that CSD's policy against, their internal policy against allowing foster parents to be adoptive parents was got around in this circumstance. And maybe I should ask the CSD people who are here, but I just wonder if you know what the background on that is. Don't you sign a contract when you become a foster parent that agrees that you understand that you are not eligible to adopt any of the children who are temporarily placed in your home? Isn't there something like that?
I'm not sure if there's that agreement. There certainly is an agreement that you agree to cooperate with CSD in carrying out their plan for these children. And when you become in an adversarial role with CSD, I don't see how you can then be considered to be functioning as a foster parent. But because of CSD's political vulnerability, they have, as far as I know, never challenged a foster parent on not complying with that agreement.
So in your, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Representative Allen.
In your experience and, you know, within your information, this happens on a fairly regular basis, common that foster parents will develop these emotional ties and successfully petition to adopt children against the policy and recommendation of CSD?
I really can't speak to how common it is.
Okay. Thank you.
I know in this case it happened and it caused a great deal of pain to these kids, and that will go with them the rest of their lives.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your testimony.
Further questions? Thank you very much. We'll skip the CSD representatives who are, it appears, one from Hillsborough and one from Salem, and call the people that are private citizens spending their work days down here, if I can, first, and we'll get back to the people who are always here later. Everett and Ruth Reed. Good afternoon. If you would identify yourselves for the record, and then proceed.
Okay, I'm Everett Reed, and this is my wife Ruth, and we're here primarily on the second
3197.
Yes.
Okay, well then let me do this preface. This testimony, for the purposes of the record, shall be considered both for 3025 and for 3197. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll let my wife go over the notes.
Well, before I do, we go right after Roger Fite. We are the foster parents that he was just discussing, and we can shed some light onto some of the reasons why the children were split up. Well, let me
just comment now that we really want to focus our attention on the objectives of the bill.
Yes.
And although you just happen to be the people involved with the case where there was an opinion probably different than yours, please try and focus it on our general policy issues that where it can be helpful to us. Thank you.
I hope you don't mind, but I think I will do some reading.
Okay.
We've been foster parents for over 7 years to over 30 children. We also have 7 children. Three are adopted, and these are adopted not through CSD but privately through Boys and Girls Aid Society. And we have filed for the adoption of our 8th child, Kellyanne Garrison, the child we will discuss today. 3 years ago, we fostered a sibling group of 4 for a year and a half. These children were all emotionally disturbed and very needy children. The 3 older children engaged in extreme sexual misconduct with their 3-year-old sister and our 3-year-old deaf boy, our 5-year-old girl, and our 7-year-old deaf boy. These 3 children were removed from our home upon learning of the sexual misconduct. Much more information later came to light. Within 2 weeks, the state planned to move the 3-year-old sibling with her older children, with the other children, which we objected to. First, on the grounds that she would be in danger of more molestation, and second, she would be placed in limbo in a temporary foster home tied to a hard-to-place sibling group. And third, she knew us as her parents and we loved her. There was a strong bond between us that would be harmful to her if broken. We hired an attorney and went through a series of hearings with CSD, including two citizen review hearings. We were always kept to a few words. Our written comments were kept from the committee for the first hearing. When we returned for the second hearing, a decision had already been made without hearing all the evidence. It was decided that Kelly would be placed with a sibling. At this point, we felt the court should make the decision. There's a mistake in my writing here. This, because of the ORS 109, it says 119. There's a couple mistakes in the testimony. Because of the ORS 109.119, we now had standing in court. We filed a petition requesting custody of Kelly in February of 86. Trial occurred upon that petition on May 28th and June 5th, 1986. We testified personally and witnesses were called on our behalf, including Dr. Jean Furchner. Brief comments enclosed from transcript. And I wanted to just read these comments over. Dr. Furchner, the attorney asked Dr. Furchner, my question was, if her placement, this is Kelly, were altered and she was no longer with the Reeds, what damage would you see occurring, if any, to Kelly? Dr. Furchner responded, well, I think you are going to get the kind of grief and bereavement process that you get when you move a child from natural parents, basically, to which I think I'd have to add that this is a child who has already lost her original parents and has been fortunate enough to make a very substantial attachment to parents again at an early enough age where that really might be of a salvage, I think, sort of influence. To move her again out of that placement at five, which in terms of attachment issue is not that young, I guess that's the thing that keeps weighing with me. Dr. Furchner was then asked, are you telling the court that there is a potential for irreparable harm to Kelly, that there is at least that potential whether or not it will be actual? She responded, well, there is certainly a potential for harm. There is a potential for some kind of scarring damage that is permanent. Children don't lose parents at age 5 years old without some substantial loss and some very substantial impairment of their ability to attach all over again. The trial continued for 2 days. At the conclusion of the trial, the Honorable Gregory E. Milnes decided it was in Kelly's best interest to remain with us rather than one or more of her siblings. And custody was removed from the state and we were awarded legal and physical custody. I want to address one particular point here. If it had not been for ORS 109.119, the court would never have known what the state was planning for this child. We admit that allowing the court to see all the evidence can make it more complicated for CSD, who otherwise can move children around like pawns on a chessboard. But in letting the court see all the evidence in our case has helped the system rather than hurt it by clearly revealing that foster parents are discriminated against, even in cases where it can be proven that the removal is damaging to the child, as shown by the decision and stated by the Honorable Judge Gregory E. Milnes. Attached is a copy of the custody order and partial transcript of the decision, which I would like to just read a few short pieces. On the transcript, on the first page there, it must be 468, I don't see it on mine, at number 9, the judge says, so I find that it would be probably dangerous to Kellyanne to remove her to a placement with Ricky.
The
child that we kept, and Ricky is the child that... Mr. Fite has.
It's her older brother. Half-brother.
There were problems.
There were some very serious problems, intercourse, okay, etc. Insomuch as CSD retains... Oh, this is on the bottom of the next page. Insomuch as CSD retains a desire to move Kellyanne into a home with Ricky, this court has little choice but to protect her from what I think would be an inappropriate placement and to withdraw Kellyanne from CSD custody. She will remain as a ward of the court with custody in the Reeds. Of course, there's much more. The state has appealed the custody decision on one ground only, and that is, they say, the court didn't have any right to hear this case. We are in favor of House Bill 3197 to clear up hesitations as to whether or not ORS 109.119 applies to juvenile court. Foster parents need to be heard in court because they are often abused by CSD. Foster parents who have the courage to speak out against CSD are often discriminated against. We need the courts for a source of justice. Passage of House Bill 3197 will help us be assured of that justice.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you for your testimony. I'll close the hearing, the public hearing on 3025, and we will come back to the witnesses that I haven't yet called at a later time. And I will open the hearing on 3197. Marjorie Sherman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As sponsors of the, or requesters of 3197, we too found some problems that have arisen since passage of ORS 109-119. And I'm sorry, excuse me, I just realized that too. I'm Margie Sherman, Secretary for the Committee for Oregon Families.
I'm Al Norblad. I'm one of the members, one of the original members, as a matter of fact, of the Committee for Oregon Families.
I'll just briefly go through my written testimony, which I believe you have. ORS 109-119 addresses the problem arising when a child and an adult have legitimately and lawfully formed a longstanding parent-child relationship. Examples are the stepmother who raises children from her husband's previous marriage, or relatives who have raised a child in effect as substitute parents for one reason or another that the original family member was not able to raise their own offspring. These problems become more urgent as our family structure is broken down and many, many children are raised by persons other than their biological parents. This disruption is painful for children, if not destructive. ORS 109-119 broke new ground last session in being the first legal recognition in Oregon that the child has a vested right to continue in a stable parent-child relationship because that relationship is fundamental to the child's emotional stability and future development. The statute does not change substantive law but merely allows all parties who claim to have such a relationship established to appear in court and state their case. The growing awareness of the seriousness of custody decisions for the children involved makes it increasingly important that the court be allowed to have access to the fullest possible information in making these delicate decisions. Before 1985, persons like step-parents, foster parents, and the like were habitually excluded from such testimony. We view House Bill 3197 as basically cleanup legislation, addressing three points of weakness which have developed over the 2 years since passage of the original statute. House Bill 3197 adds the words or wardship to clear up hesitations as to whether or not this statute applies in juvenile court, which I believe Judge Norblad will speak to further. We felt that it was obvious that it should apply to juvenile court, but there has arisen some question as to whether that was truly the case. To restrict juvenile court from making proper discovery concerning the child's deepest relationships is, of course, to ask them to proceed without all the evidence. Additionally, House Bill 3197 permits the court to hear the evidence in cases of dissolution of marriage. During presentation of testimony in 1985 before this panel, The question was raised as to whether or not permitting substitute parents to appear in proceedings involving the dissolution of marriage would not make already complex proceedings even more unmanageable. A number of witnesses, including circuit judges, admitted that there would be some tendency to further complicate these proceedings, but that it would be better for everyone involved, and especially the children, if that were the case, if the court were allowed to hear all of the evidence. I won't go into the examples of why that is, and I'll allow you to read that part yourself. The third part of the bill would be the clarification of as to the power of the court to determine temporary custody. Some legal hassles have arisen as to the effect of ORS 109-119 as it is currently written, which does not allow temporary orders but only permanent orders. This was never intended as by the original drafters of the bill. Now, as we heard originally from testimony for Representative Hooley's bill, inclusion of the word wardship is the, in House Bill 3197, is the most controversial issue. We didn't intend for juvenile court to be excluded. It's necessary for the court to have all of the evidence from any person who has established a long-term parent-child relationship to be able to come to the court and present.